Oops. Can't see with these glasses. All right. All right. It's a motley crew today. So as you can probably surmise, this is a little bit different than our normal Sunday. And this is the 9 o'clock service. 11 o'clock service will be multi-generational. And so I'm just going to be here doing the morning talk and as if I'm just continuing with the last 50 talks I've done. This is part 51. That's why you're here. Okay. So today's talk is called Stop It, and it's going to be looking at our self-inflicted discomfort. Are you familiar with the concept of self-inflicted discomfort? Okay, and so the big key point is stop it when it comes to our self-inflicted discomfort. Okay, I'll make that a little bit more clear as we go. But first, I have a brief movie to drive the point about the importance of just stopping it. Okay, let's see how it goes. Might want to dim the lights.
Dr. Switzer?
Yes, come in. I'm just washing my hands.
I'm Catherine Bigman. Janet Carlisle referred me.
Oh, yes. You're being very alive in a box.
Yes, that's me. Should I lay down?
Oh, no, we don't do that anymore. Just have a seat. And let me tell you a bit about our billing. I charge $5 for the first 5 minutes, and then absolutely nothing after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Too good to be true, as a matter of fact.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that our session won't last the full 5 minutes. Now, we don't do any insurance billing, so you would either have to pay in cash or by check.
Wow, okay.
And I don't make change.
All right.
And go.
Go.
Well, tell me about the problem that you wish to address.
Oh, okay. Well, I have this fear of being buried alive in a box. I start thinking about being buried alive, and I begin to panic.
Has anyone ever tried to bury you alive in a box?
No, but truly thinking about it does make my life horrible. I mean, I can't go through tunnels or be in an elevator or in a house, anything boxy.
So what you're saying is you're claustrophobic.
Yes, that's it.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. We find most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, here they are. Stop it!
I'm sorry?
Stop it!
Stop it?
Yes. S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So I should just stop it.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to go through life being scared of being buried alive in a box, do you? I mean, that sounds frightening.
Yes.
Then stop it.
I can't. I mean, it's been with me since childhood.
No, we don't go there. Just stop it.
So I should just stop being afraid of being buried alive in a box.
You got it. Good go. Well, it's only been It's only been 3 minutes, so that will be $3.
I only have a five, so.
Well, I don't make change.
Then I guess I'll take the full 5 minutes.
Fine. All right. Well, what other problems would you like to address?
I'm bulimic. I stick my fingers down my throat.
Stop it! Not of some kind? Don't do that.
But I'm compelled to. My mom used to call me fatty.
No. No, we don't go there.
But I've been having this dream.
No, we don't go there either.
But my horoscope did say...
We definitely don't go there. Just stop it. What else?
Well, I have self-destructive relationships with men.
Stop it! You want to be with a man, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yes.
Well, then stop it. Don't be such a big baby.
I wash my hands a lot.
That's all right.
It is?
I wash my hands all the time. And there's a lot of germs out there. Uh-huh. Yeah, don't worry about that one.
I'm afraid to drive.
Well, stop it! How are you going to get around? Get in the car and drive, you kook.
Stop it! You stop it! You stop it!
What's the problem, Kathy?
I don't like this. I don't like this therapy at all. You're just telling me to stop it.
And you don't like that?
No, I don't.
So you think we're moving too fast, is that it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
All right, then let me give you 10 words that I think will clear everything up for you. You want to get a pad and a pencil for this one?
All right.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here are the 10 words. Stop it or I'll bury you alive in a box!
So we're going to be looking at something to stop. That's what we're going to be looking at. And I'm wanting to talk about how we inadvertently complicate our lives by superimposing upon what we're having as our life experience something that is in addition to what we're having, as opposed to really being with the moment as it arises. And I'll say more about that in just a moment. I'm going to show another, the last short, this is a much shorter clip, and it's to help us understand that there's a distinction between what we're having and the psychology associated with our experience of our now moment. And one way to illustrate this principle is to look at time. Have you ever had a love-hate relationship with time before? Okay, and how time can sometimes seem against us, especially when there seems to be not enough. So just see what you think about this.
Recent events have compelled me to study how humans perceive the passage of time. For example, I've often heard people comment that time seems to pass more slowly in one instance or more quickly in another. In reality, the actual passage of time remains fixed.
I suppose it depends on how people perceive time. Every situation is different. It depends on how you feel.
I've been testing the aphorism, a watched pot never boils. I've boiled the same amount of water in this kettle 62 times. In some cases, I have ignored the kettle. In others, I have watched it intently. In every instance, the water reaches its boiling point in precisely 51.7 seconds. It appears I am not capable of perceiving time any differently than my internal chronometer.
Why don't you turn it off?
Sir?
Data people do not have internal chronometers. Why don't you see what happens if you turn yours off?
Thank you, sir. I will try that.
Just don't be late for your shift.
Yeah, don't be late for your shift. All right, so have you ever been to the airport? And have you noticed how time changes when you get into the TSA line if you don't have TSA pre? And how just being in that experience of just waiting and what happens in the experience of waiting, what takes place? Like, let's say you're waiting in the line for the airplane or you get through the security. What else is going on besides the experience of being in line?
Anxiety.
Say again?
Anxiety.
Anxiety, why? Right, there's the concern about making the airplane. And so we understand that there are experiences where time will tend to either seem to stand still as if it's not moving at all or be very, very quick. Have you ever found yourself really enjoying something and time just going by, lickety-split? Well, this is called psychological time, and it's in relationship to a constant. In other words, time just happens. An hour is an hour, regardless of whether or not we're waiting. But yet our experience within the constant of what we're having, in this case time, can produce a level of discomfort that is associated with what we do with what we're having. Can you see how that's so? So in other words, we can still be in line. And now just imagine that you're in the TSA line, and instead of being concerned about making it through the line, you're striking up a conversation with someone who's standing with you. And all of a sudden, you're up to having to show your driver's license and your ticket before you know it. Have you ever had that experience before? And so we know that these experiences that we're having in and of themselves produce a certain level of stress or discomfort, but we add to that depending upon what's happening in our experience. That's not rocket science. That makes sense to all of us, correct? Well, what we need to also know is that in other ways that there are constants in our life with respect to what's going on. In other words, we're always having some kind of life experience. And in the having of any specific life experience, there could be a measure of discomfort associated with simply what we're having. Correct? So, for instance, if you're having a loss in your life, there's a certain amount of discomfort. If you're having a divorce, or if you're having an illness, or if you're having a baby, or if you're having something that brings you a great deal of joy and wonder, there is an addition to what you're having as the event, another level of activity that's happening within ourselves in our relationship to what we're having. Is that clear? That makes perfect sense so far? So a couple of additional ideas is that we know in the context of the psychology that we can have a felt sense of some experience. In other words, it feels this way or that. And if we just be with the experience without making up a story about what we're having, then that felt sense of that experience will arise and pass away within seconds. That's just the nature of things. But what happens, what we do to make the felt sense of whatever we're having endure, even to the point where it transcends from discomfort to actual suffering, that's something that we do by virtue of how we're having what we're having. How we're having our experience, or how we're being with what we're having. Can you see how that's so? That depending upon how we are being with whatever's going on in our life, we can add to it an additional layer upon layers of discomfort if we're not mindful that that's what's going on. And then when we try to dial it back or find our way out of it, what has happened is that our layers of discomfort that we've superimposed upon what we're having becomes a kind of karma that we have to disentangle. It's a cell phone. I can't help myself. Stop it. That's right. Stop it. And so basically, we don't understand that this is sort of what gets created by virtue of we're having an experience. It has a felt sense to it, but because we do something in addition to just being with our experience, something in addition gets created, and it eventually comes back to us. And it comes back to us in the form of perhaps a more complex, convoluted life experience. Of course, you know, that's something that we find ourselves subjected to from time to time. What I'm wanting us to examine today is the distinction between what we're having as our life experience and then what becomes the story that we make up about it. You understand what I'm saying? So let us just say that there's a distinction between what we have as our life experience, and you can just imagine all the things that are possible to experience, but then there is the story that we make up about it. Can you see how there's a difference? And we can be in an experience, and the moment that we feel some sense of discomfort, the tendency is that we instantly go, instead of feeling the feeling of the moment and the discomfort associated with it, we make up a story about it instead. Okay, and so just imagine the last time you were triggered in a triggering moment, you probably came up with a story that justified whatever was your response to that triggering moment. Can you see how that might be what's happening in the background of things? So I'd like us to examine some of the things that are universal about our stories and the dynamic of making up a story that's in addition to what we're having as our life experience. Because I'm wanting us to understand that as we look at our spiritual journey, as we look at wanting to align ourselves with the activity of spirit that right now is seeking to bring into our life a greater good, but that greater good can't make it in or through the story that we've made up about what's happening in our life. That our story becomes of such a magnitude that it actually becomes our identity, our sense of who we are. We cannot know ourselves other than through the experience of the story that we tell about it, about us. So here's a couple of things that are universal to the dynamic of stories and what happens when we have a difficult life situation that triggers us into some uncomfortable experience, and then we superimpose upon that experience what becomes our tell. In other words, when we tell our story, then we are experiencing one of the universal aspects of what story is, and that is that all story is made up. Okay, so everything that you come up with that describes how your life is, either to yourself or to someone else, you are making that up. We are making that up. Now, there's nothing bad about knowing that. It's just that we need to understand that that's a dynamic that we participate in. And so the issue is that are there aspects of our story that we have made up that aren't working for us? Can you think of an aspect of your story that might not be working for you right now? Anybody care to kind of call out an aspect or a theme in one story that might not be working out? How about the theme of insufficiency? Anybody got that as a part of your story? How's that working for you? It's not, is it?
The theme of someone is
Right, the theme of someone is against us. When we have aspects of our story where we're having some aspect of our life against us, the other universal thing about stories is not only are all stories made up, but all stories will set our mind on a search for evidence to verify our story's validity. And so the thing that our consciousness does unconsciously is gather evidence to verify the truth of our story, even those parts that don't work for us, you see. And it's important that we understand this, and this is not something that, you know, we're taught normally. And so this is in the category of transformative teachings, transformative living, that we need to awaken to the dynamics that affect how we're creating our personal reality so that we can mitigate the process and therefore align ourselves with creating a greater good that is in congruent with the truth of who we are, our sense of more than enough. So as we begin to examine the dynamic of story and recognize that there may be aspects of our story that we have made up, where we have inadvertently had someone or something be against us, or we have a theme within our story, aspects of our story that aren't working for us. Another theme that we might find in our story centers around regrets. Do you have anything in your story that has regret associated with it? Okay. If you can acknowledge that, then it's important for us to understand that while I have an aspect of my story where I have regrets, I have made up what those regrets are. And I have reinforced the activity of my life to confirm the context of those regrets. In other words, oftentimes my regrets live in the sense that I have failed as a father in some respects. I have a little itty-bitty aspect of my story tucked way, way away for not too many people to see, and including myself, not to go there, around regrets over my relationship with my daughter. I haven't spoken to my daughter in over 14 years. And my granddaughter in 13 years, I haven't seen her. And so there are aspects of that part of my story that can work against me, that can keep me tied to a sense of regret and a sense of holding on to that identity within me that lives as an inadequate father, that can run a part of my life if I'm not working on looking at those aspects of my story that aren't serving me, but the aspects that I have made up about my life, you see. And so if we discover aspects of our story that aren't working for us, and we know that our story is made up, what would you imagine would be the healthy thing to do in the awareness that I have aspects of my story that aren't working for me? What would you imagine would be the healthy thing to do, George?
Make up a better story.
Make up a better story. Yes, absolutely. And so if we are to make up a better story, we just can't kind of pretend a different story. But what we have to understand is that the story that we made up is not to deny the events and circumstances of our life, but to recognize that the events and circumstances of our life are one thing, but how we take in those events and circumstances and what we make that mean with respect to who we are and what our worth is all the difference in the world. Can we not see that? And so it's critical for us to examine our own story, because there's nobody else that's going to fix it for us. There's no one else going to heal those aspects of ourself that are holding on to that story as if that's the truth of us. The only person that that's going to be instrumental in altering that is ourselves. So we have to have a different context with respect to managing those experiences that live out of the self-talk that generates its own virtual reality, in the sense that, you know, here we have ourself, and yet for the most part, the quality of our life lives not in what we're having, but in what we're making what we're having be unto us. Can you see that? That when we are understanding that what I'm having is one thing, and then what I do with what I'm having is something else. So typically, when we're not on an intentional process of awakening spiritually, the tendency is that when we're engaged in a story and we have parts of that story that don't feel okay, we either try to cover up those parts of us, or if we're dealing with an experience of, let's say, insufficiency or otherwise something that's against us, we want to fix what's happening out here as opposed to look at our story that we're making up about what we're having. In other words, we want to change the experience so that we can have a different story. I mean, that's sort of how we are operating in our life. When we source our well-being or source our discomfort outside of ourselves, the story then becomes an effort to try to alter what we're having as our life experience, as opposed to correcting the core issue, and that is the context of our perception and meaning making. How is it possible that I take what I have and use it against me? How is it possible that you're taking what you're having and it have the power to diminish you? How is that possible? It is only possible when we have confused ourselves with what we're having, as opposed to see that, no, I am not what I'm having, but what I'm having is something for me to use. And so the moment that I confuse myself with this is me, then I am lost in this story, and I have to do something with this to get it to change, to get rid of it, in order for my story to improve. Can you see the dilemma? That the dilemma is that when we believe that we are what we have, then in order for our story to change, we have to have something different in the outer. So what I'm saying is stop that. Stop doing that and instead begin to look at those parts of yourself where the story isn't working for you. And don't try to fix it by trying to find a different thing to have that improves your story, but rather recognize that the fact that the story isn't working for you in that area of your life means that in that moment when you acquired the story that this is against me, in that moment, there was something missing in your capacity to be with that experience without feeling diminished by it or triggered by it or otherwise emotionally altered by it. And so recognizing that those parts of myself that live in a not-so-great story are the consequences of my, for whatever reason, inability to be with what I'm having without taking on the sense that this is against me, without taking on this as a mirror unto my own disconnect. That is a phenomenon based upon my journey in consciousness. But there's a point when we awaken, when we discover, well, wait a minute, this is my time. This is my time to awaken to the distinction between who I am and what I'm having. And it's not until we have that capacity to see that difference between who we are and what we're having can we step out of those stories that define us. Is that making sense? Okay, so So what's important, especially as we as a spiritual community are moving towards really focusing on what is transformation? What does it mean to really embody our spiritual principles? Then it begins with working with the part of us that is the area where we can have the there's a saying in organizational consulting is what can be the single change that creates the most benefit for the entire organization? What is the single change within our own way of being that can create the biggest shift in our life? And that biggest change that can happen is when we begin to not be in our experience of our story as if it's the truth of us, but be in our experience of our story because it's calling us to be unto it, the one. Because our story is calling us to make a difference. Our story is for us to use as opposed to it being something that defines us. So I want to make this distinction, and that is that when we are living from our sense of not enough, what happens is that what we're having as our experience becomes a part of ourself, becomes a part of our identity. In other words, when we have a sense of not enough, then what we're having becomes insufficient. Can you see how that's so? Well, when we can arrive at a place where we see that that's the real issue, that the real issue is how I'm being with what I'm having, and if what I'm having is my story or a life situation that looks and feels against me, then how can I use that situation to bring me into a greater expression of the truth of who I am, who and what I've come here to be, the qualities on my cue card, or my sense of more than enough? How can I use what I'm having as a means to express that which is the truth of me, as opposed to use what I'm having as a mirror unto my own inadequacy or unworthiness? Because that's how we use it right now. We use what we're having as evidence as to why I can't, or why I don't, or why I have, or it's just used in a way that doesn't serve us. But how can we use what we're having in a way that unleashes our magnificence? And so as we get into this effort to really focus on transforming our lives, you know, this is one of the purposes of the Mind Movie Project, and that is that we need tools to help us keep our focus on focusing on our experience is calling us to be unto our life experience something greater than our stories. Okay, and so as we look at this idea of working with ourselves, let us begin to understand that the first place to do that deeper looking, that deeper work, is to look at the story that we're making up about our life. And so I'm going to close our time together with just talking about what would be discussion questions. If you're in a spirit group discussing the Sunday message, these ideas will take this a little bit deeper. So if we can begin with the question, you know, is there an aspect of the story when we recall it that has with it a certain measure of discomfort? And to be able to acknowledge what that is, because that's the first step, is that we have to acknowledge where we have ourselves created aspects of our story that keep us locked into a way of being that doesn't serve us. And then the next question is that how can we use this very same story, the story of my daughter, you know, and I having this falling out, or the story of my cancer, the story of my losing weight, or the things in your life where you have taken a situation that is difficult to be with, but yet you have been with that difficulty because it's been a portal to your transformation, and you're able to experience a sense of being greater than your story by virtue of that transformation, when you're able to experience that for yourself and demonstrate to yourself that you are not your story, then you'll begin to make friends with the story that you've had. And part of it is that you recognize that the story that I have, the story that I'm telling with respect to the way in which my life is, if there's aspects of it that don't really mirror the magnificence, your magnificence, then that's calling you to a place of healing and reconciliation, right? It's not calling you to try to get something out there to make you feel better. It's calling you to find a place within yourself of reconciliation. And part of that has to do with answering these questions. And so what would be the new story that you tell? As George mentioned, part of our challenge in rediscovering our sense of wholeness and worth is being able to tell a different story about what we're having. And, you know, imagine if I told the story of my illness as being a terrible thing. Poor me. And how many people do you know that have victim as their story? You know? So, including ourselves, we're all in this together. And so when we talk about what's going on, it's easy for us to get into that place of enrolling others into our story so that we can feel supported. But if you've been through the Q process, you recognize that that's an exercise in futility. Because if we make it all up and we're telling a story that doesn't serve us, we're actually putting that energy out there as if it's the truth. And we have to stop doing that. So stop it. Stop telling a story or an aspect of your story that doesn't serve you. Stop it. You're bigger than that. And we desperately need our hero's story, our stories of transformation. We need those stories to be a part of our conversations. Now, it's not to say that when we're having something that's hard and difficult, that that's a part of our story. But how we tell that, how we communicate that, is integral to our healing and our well-being. All right, that's all I have. That's 11 o'clock service is going to be totally different, and if you want to stay for that, it'll be quite the show. God bless you all. Thank you so much.